All right. Let's get fired up here. Hello and welcome to the next episode of Read Rothbard. If you've taken any time to listen to the previous four episodes, you will know that we really don't have a lot of direction, structure, or talent. But as always, I'm Daniel, and joined by my friend and cohort, Robert. How you doing, Robert?
Hey, guys. I'm doing fantabulous, except for the allergic reaction I'm living. I feel like a monster man.
Yeah, well, that's probably a good thing that we're not recording video on this. It's just an audio podcast, ladies.
That's right. Don't want to frighten people. Sorry. Anyway, I'm fine. How is everybody? How are you?
Doing well. Daughter's been sick, but she's recovering. She had a temperature 103, 104 for a little while, but getting over that. So that's good news. I've been busy with work. We've had a couple of ideas for doing a show, and we've been neglecting doing one for a week and a half, so apologies to our listener or two. We have a whole bunch of stuff we could talk about, and there's a few things I don't want to talk about, but we can.
Ooh, what are those? I don't even know what these are. I mean, we've got such a backlog of information and things to talk about. News just keeps happening, and all our ideas just get, I don't know, it's like you've got all this news that's really hot and you want to talk about it, but then more new news comes in and kind of takes over. So it'd be weird to talk about older stuff, but I mean, it's still relevant to the podcast and the topics we like to talk about.
Yeah, that's true.
What do you not want to talk about?
Well, I didn't want to broach the subject of the recent shooting in Orlando because it is a hotly discussed topic on the Facebook these days. Lots of opinions, most of them lefty, most of them all about the gun control and it being a hate crime. And if you look at it, it's almost this, to use a horse racing term, like a trifecta. You know, it's an assault weapon was used. A victim group is persecuted, therefore it's a hate crime, and it's a Muslim guy involved.
Right.
So, you know, it like boils all these things
all
together
these hot
on the agenda, you know?
Yeah.
And, I mean, I don't get too much into conspiracy theories anymore. You know, I did like listening to Alex Jones back in the day, but he's a bit too far. I don't know what he's saying about this thing, but it is almost like such a coincidence that these recent hot-button issues are all rolled into one event, and a tragic and terrible event. I mean, I don't want to condone this in any way, but it does seem like it is fodder for a political agenda, certainly. You got any thoughts on that? I mean, I didn't want to touch this one just because it is sensitive, but, you know, we're already here.
Yeah, I mean, there's a bunch of different ways. It's funny, I did think of when something like this happens, I do kind of harken back to my Alex Jones days and wonder what his take on this would be. It seems like the perfect thing, and I'm sure you can spin it into a perfect thing with all these, like what you're saying, all these groups all coming together. I guess from my perspective, I would most be interested in talking about the gun control issue or maybe just the idea that it's an opportunity for politicians to kind of grandstand and to act like they care, and maybe they do care as human beings. I mean, they should, I suppose, but then their solution is always more violence. So I tend to discount anything they say because their solutions aren't solutions. Or if there are solutions, they're always violently enforced solutions, which just create more problems. So I would like to mention, I don't think we've mentioned this on the podcast yet, but if you are for gun control, as the colloquially known topic is known, you're not actually for gun control. You are for gun consolidation because you're not going to have people just voluntarily giving like every single gun up. So what you would be for is for people to come to people's homes with guns, with other guns, and to violently appropriate those guns. So you're not actually for gun control. You're for greater gun consolidation in the hands of fewer and fewer people. Now, I know a lot of people are totally fine with that, but let's just call it what it is, gun consolidation, not gun control.
And that's different than simple confiscation?
I'm not sure what you're saying.
Well, I would think that people would view that as a gun confiscation, but you're saying consolidation. So is that how would you describe the difference between those two terms?
Well, I would say they're one and the same in this case. You're talking about confiscating guns, I mean, taking them, stealing them, which means that there is a greater number of guns in the fewer number of hands.
Unless they're doing the Australian-style confiscation and destruction, right?
Well, even if you're destroying them, you're still decreasing the diffusion of guns, I guess you could say it, the dispersion of guns. You're not evening the playing field. You're creating a more unlevel playing field.
Okay, I think I see what you're saying. So the only people who would actually comply with such a confiscation order or consolidation would be law-abiding people who you most likely don't need to really worry about. But the criminals who are going to ignore the laws to begin with are not going to comply with this. In addition, as anyone who's listened to our podcast for a while will understand, that we consider the state one of the greatest predators, and then the guns would be more focused in the hands of you know, potential tyranny.
Absolutely. And government is a far more greater danger than your random mass shooter. I mean, just if you look at it from a statistic perspective, I mean, 250 dead human beings in the 20th century alone by government, not including wars. And I mean, I don't know what the casualty list on the mass random shooters, I mean, it's growing all the time, but it's not going to reach those numbers anytime soon.
Yeah. And that number again, because I think it cut out, was 250 million or more people killed by their own governments. Yeah, so that's one of the things that people often argue is that, well, we don't have to worry about that here for whatever reason, because democracy, because freedom, because whatever. But then, you know, I would refute that with, well, Hitler was democratically elected, and where did that get you?
And one of the first things, I don't know if it's one of the first things he did, but Hitler was pro-gun control and did a whole lot of gun confiscation, because the government would want to disarm its people, because you don't want competition. So,
yeah, you know, that reminds me of that thing that people would say back when we were younger, like, perhaps you'd like to be speaking German now, you know, like World War II was justified because the German menace, the German threat, whatever. But if we take it back, you know, another 150, 200 years, we could rephrase it. Perhaps you'd like to be speaking English now. You know, imagine, if you will, 1780s, 1770s, 1760s, whatever the time period was where the U.S. was British colonies, and the quote-unquote legitimate government of the time was the British Crown. And if they had said, oh, you guys can only have guns if you're in the army, you know, which is what a lot of leftists try to say these days is what the Second Amendment's all about, then the only people who would be allowed to have guns would have been the British soldiers, and there would have been no American Revolutionary War. So, you know, we'd all be speaking English right now. Ha, ha, ha. Perhaps with an accent.
Right.
And I would submit that most people probably think that the Revolutionary War was a justified war, or at least, you know, we're better off for having not remained under the British Crown and whatnot. But if these people had their way back then that would never have been possible.
Right. If they had only allowed weapons in the hands of the British military occupying force, then the revolution wouldn't have been possible.
Right, and perhaps we'd still be at that 3% tax rate that King George had on us versus the 48, 47% that we're getting hit with now.
Yeah. For all you pragmatic argument lovers.
Another point I wanted to make, it goes along with the conspiracy theories and whatnot, but and sensible gun control. A lot of people say that they want to license guns like they license cars, if not do the full-on, you know, Australian confiscation program, which apparently is a raving success, according to everyone on Facebook today. But I want to point out that there are already many gun control measures in place, and that one of the things that they want to enhance is the psychological evaluation component of owning a gun. But I want to entertain the thought that psychological evaluation based on whose terms, whose thresholds need to be met. The government's, of course. And I don't know if you're familiar with the DSM, the Diagnostic Manual for Psychological Disorders.
Mental disorders.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So the new one that has come out, the DSM-5. It lists in there as a psychological problem distrust of authority, distrust of government. So essentially, if you put two and two together and, you know, using the common core math, you know, you take this square and add it to the circle.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, you automatically disqualify anyone who questions authority or government from owning a gun. And those are the very same people who you'd want to have the guns in case, you know, the shit went down. Now, I'm not saying that I think there's going to be like a hot resistance type thing. I can't see that happening. But that's the whole point of the Second Amendment is, you know, you got to get a level playing field with your oppressors, you know, to be able to defend yourself. And the final point I'll make is that, yeah, there is the Second Amendment, there is the Constitution, but when it boils down to it, they're illegitimate anyway. They're rules that the government set on itself and doesn't even follow. But the natural right of being able to defend oneself should not be determined by a piece of paper. What's our next topic up for a bid, Robert Johnson?
You want me to decide?
You had the
list
going.
My list, I mean, I've been obsessed with this Uber stuff for the past couple of weeks. There's been a couple.
That's good. Yeah, we can do an update on Uber. We did a show about that recently.
Yeah, just a little bit of update. Uber was fined several hundred thousand euros in France for operating an illegal service. And because it claimed that it wasn't using, quote unquote, professional drivers, that it was therefore illegal. When the actual definition of whether or not you're a professional at anything, whether you be a blacksmith, whether you be a driver, whether you be architect, the definition is that someone appreciates your work enough to pay for it. So it doesn't really pass the Smith test saying that Uber doesn't use professional drivers. If you're willing to pay someone to drive you somewhere, that makes that person a professional driver. That's all I had to say about that. I don't really know what else to say. It seems like everybody's coming after Uber because they're coming after, you know, the entrenched taxi monopolies are actually having to compete, and they're all have their panties in a bunch about having to actually do something because they can't actually, you know, improve their service to the point where they actually compete with people who just want to use their cars to give somebody a ride. So they use the violent arm of government to come in and say, declare that people giving people rides is illegal because of reasons. So it's really disgusting. That's what's going on in France. In Austin, there was a really dumb article, and I'm sorry I don't have it in front of me, but Uber and Lyft left recently, and all these startups have come into Austin. And Austin was kind of worried that they're kind of seen as this tech mecca, like really, really progressive and really on the cutting edge of technology, and all the young, smart people, please come to Austin and really get this hotbed going here. And then they kick out – well, they don't kick out, but they make it essentially untenable for Uber and Lyft because they were putting all these regulations on them. And Uber and Lyft's like, well, if you're going to put these regulations on us, we're out. And so then they refused to – or they put up for a vote, and the vote failed. So the regulations were still on. So true to their word, Uber and Lyft left. And all these startups kind of like jumped in to fill the void, as the market does. And the article was kind of worded – so the mayor was talking about how – while Uber and Lyft were still there, they had this monopoly, which he called a duopoly, which I don't think he understands what the hell a monopoly is. Monopoly is when you don't have a competition in a given market for a given thing. And Uber and Lyft, not only do they compete with each other, they also competed with the local taxis. They also competed with people just naturally giving other people rides. And they compete with the local transit, the local bus service, other transportation services. And they're also already competing with all these other startups, which are already in place before these they left. So for the mayor to say that they had a duopoly is really, really stupid. He's basically complaining that Uber and Lyft were really, really popular and people really, really liked them. There's another article called Uber Agreed by Any Other Name, where they talk about how Uber is doing really well and they're seeking world domination. Well, that should be any company's goal, to provide such an amazing service that everybody in the world wants to use it. One of the Uber startups the little startups in Austin claimed something Austin, Ride Austin or something like that. And their stated goal by their CEO was just to remain in Austin because they're, quote, not greedy like Uber. So what they're saying is listen, we don't think our service is good enough for anybody else to use. We only think we're maybe good enough for Uber or Austinites to use, but we have no aspirations to service anybody else besides people in Austin. It's this hatred of making money, I guess, getting providing a good service for customers. It's seen as greed, as in like a bad thing. It's this weird anti-service ideology that seems to go hand in hand with a lot of socialism, and it's really quite bizarre. Any thoughts, Daniel? Am I still on?
You are, yeah. I was letting you go as long as you wanted. I'm trying to get better about waiting until you're fully finished before I jump in with my inane remarks.
Wrong, but thank you for that. I felt like I was just droning on about stuff. If you have any comments on any of that stuff, it'd be good.
Well, I agree with your points on almost all of it. I would say that profit does appear to be a bad word when it comes to a lot of people's opinions, and greed goes along with it. And as we've touched on before, profit is simply saying that you're providing a service that is of value to somebody because they're willing to pay you for it. And you've taken some, you know, components and combined them in such a way and delivered them in such a fashion to where you can charge a little bit more than what it costs you to create. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's a fully voluntary situation. You're improving the lives of the people who are purchasing from you. Otherwise, they wouldn't be purchasing from you unless there's a government mandate demanding that you do it. Otherwise, you're imprisoned or fined. So that's a mini rant within a rant.
Nice. Rant squared.
Meta rant.
Also in the news, there was a universal basic income, and we could do an episode entirely on universal basic income and why that's a horrific idea. But there was a Swiss vote last week, and the voters turned it down. It was basically guaranteeing, I think, like 1,000 Swiss francs a month or 1,200 Swiss francs a month or something like that. It was something around, I want to say it was like $1,500 or some $1,800, something like that. Anyway, they turned it down, so that's actually kind of good news. Yeah, that's how much I got. I'm really kind of chomping at the bit to talk about the Seattle issue, the Seattle rape case, Daniel. Are you interested in talking about that?
Yeah, I'll just give a couple of quick comments on basic income or guaranteed income. I've actually seen a lot of this in the social media sphere recently, and it kind of has a libertarian tint to it. They're trying to say that libertarians, or some libertarians or professed libertarians, are advocating this, and they refer to like Milton Friedman and his ideas, and they call him a libertarian. Of course, he's not. There are many reasons why it's not a libertarian idea at all, because where do you get the money from? You steal it. And that sort of violates the central theme of libertarianism. But there are many reasons why it's bad. One, you are incentivizing not working. You're closing the gap between being a lazy slob and getting a job. You're making that much easier to not bother with being productive. And we should certainly do a show completely about this topic because I think it would warrant a very lengthy discussion.
Yeah, because, I mean, real quickly, I'm going to say a few things here, but it really, we should get into it. It would reduce the labor pool, guaranteed. I'm sorry, it just would. There are a bunch of pilot programs around the world where they're just doing like a city here and a community here, and that's not a big enough sample size to really understand the damage you would do to the market. If you all of a sudden you're taking money and giving it away to making it to the point where people don't have to work, well, they're not going to, and that's going to reduce the amount of labor, which is going to increase the cost of goods and services because it's going to make them more scarce. And so what you're really doing is all of a sudden you have this guaranteed basic income. Well, the cost of goods and services is going to skyrocket. So that guaranteed basic income is going to go less and less. So you're just creating a new baseline level of poverty. And maybe it would just readjust and then you're massively poor on this universal basic income and you'd have to get a job again. But it would, it would be just terrible.
Yeah, wouldn't you run into the same problem with the minimum wage, how inflation is growing faster than the minimum wage, therefore the minimum wage is never enough? It's ridiculous. And then it brings to mind that, poverty is whatever they happen to say it is today. They change the definitions. We have talked about this before, where it's a certain percentage or quintile of a group, and they base it on some numbers and some math, when the actual, material improvement in people's lives is not taken into account. So you know, the poverty line here in the U.S. is luxury living in virtually any other country, especially third world countries, or if you look back 100 years, 200 years, you know, most people in poverty have some food, they have a place to stay, they might have air conditioning, color television, a vehicle, an iPhone, you name it, you know, and they still qualify, quote unquote, as in poverty. So
yeah,
it's just a,
yeah.
No, go ahead.
Yeah, it's a sliding scale and it's constantly, it's a moving target. The poorer people today live better than the kings of old, with refrigeration and air conditioning and modern medicine and all these things that the market has provided. Yet people constantly decry the poor. What's the solution? Well, we steal from the rich, then we just give it to the poor. And then you're just subsidizing poverty and you're creating more poverty because you're disincentivizing people from actually improving their situation.
Well said, sir. What's the next topic up for bid?
Next topic up for bid is something you pointed to me yesterday morning. There's a gentleman in Seattle, I believe, who is running under some fire for a method of mating with females. Why you might have it in front of me. I unfortunately am in Amish land right here, and I don't have any real tech. So if you could give the people a rundown of the story.
Yeah, sure. I'm not going to throw any names out there because this person who's accused of these things is friends of people I know. I don't know this person personally, but allegedly what has been going on is that he has been posing as a separate identity, a different person on Facebook. He's been posing as a female recruiter for porn acting, and he basically treats it like a numbers game where he'll go on Facebook and contact a bunch of young, attractive women and try to talk them into trying out to be a porn actress. And they have, you know, a whole story about how it's dangerous and they're doing what they're doing to try to help bring people into it more safely, et cetera, et cetera. And I guess, you know, a few women actually went through with this and set up an audition through this person with this guy who is a photographer. And they said, you know, you got to meet with this guy. He's going to give you some questions. He's going to take some photos, and then you're going to have sex just to prove that you wouldn't chicken out if you actually got hired on for a job. And as it goes on and on, some of the women catch wind of each other, and they notice that they haven't actually been getting offers. And so they start to feel like, oh, perhaps we've been getting scammed, and that now they feel like this is a sexual assault or a sexual predation. I mean, at the very least, like a fraud on a level. But that's the essentials, right? Is there anything that you think I'm missing? You can certainly fill in some color here and there.
Sure. So, yeah, the girls are kind of seeking out and trying to get a rape charge filed against the guy. Is that correct?
Yeah, they have contacted local police in several areas and haven't gotten very far. There is also a social media shunning of the guy. And I imagine, you know, some real-life shunning as well.
Right. So basically, from my point of view, I mean, you have a young woman who is an adult who is contacted with the proposal that, hey, you're an attractive woman. Would you like to do pornography? I don't know the way the contact was done, but at some point, the girl agreed, and she voluntarily went with the intention of getting photographed, being interviewed, and then having sex with this man. She went there with the intention to do that. Then, while she's there, at least one of the girls that was interviewed for the story claims that she was plied with many drinks. And she drank them to the point at which she was very inebriated. Now, she's an adult. She can decide whether or not to have a drink, and she should know when she's had enough. Anything else than that is not accepting responsibility for your own actions. Then she goes on to have sex with the man. And then after the fact, since she wasn't receiving any of these offers or whatever to be in any movies, Ben is now claiming rape and claiming that he had no intention to ever do so. Now, from a market point of view, if someone is claiming to be a porn recruiter and you're not getting any, you go through the process and then you don't get any feedback or any follow through from your interview, you may take the social media and say, hey, I don't think this guy's a very good porn recruiter. I'm perfectly fine with that. Great. That's a good way to weed out a bad business. Hey, listen, everybody, this guy's terrible at porn recruiting. Don't go to him. Go to his competitor. Fantastic. what this guy seems to be guilty of, in my view, is not following through with what he said he was going to do and posing as this other person. All he really needs to do is hire somebody to contact women, to get women in there for him to photograph and to have sex with, and then follow through with what he said he was going to do. So my point when you first brought it up to me, saying, is this guy a rapist? And I said, if this guy's a rapist, because this girl had sex with this guy on the condition that what he was saying to her was true. So his truth claims based on their truth value, or his claims based on their truth value, is what she was going off of, whether or not to continue the interview and to eventually have sex with this guy. Well, that's true in every case of any interaction with any woman and man, or any couple, or any sexual encounter with any human beings. Any date, if you've ever gone on a date and ever lied about anything and then gone on to have sex, you would be considered essentially a rapist, because your partner is always going to be conditionally having sex with you based on the truth value of your claims. If you go up and say you're a multi-million-dollar playboy and you wine and dine a lady and she has sex with you and then she finds out that you're a broke guy with no job, whatever, she'll be upset, but it wouldn't necessarily be rape. If you think that's rape, then everybody on the planet is a rapist, because everybody's lied to their spouse or their loved ones or to a prospective mate at some point about something ever. So just look at your own closets there if you're calling this guy a rapist.
Now, you're also including lies of omission, right? Or perhaps people not knowing each other well enough to, you know all the facts, but they still decide to jump in the sack together. I mean, I'm sure that happens pretty often.
I would think so.
Yeah, so essentially what you're saying is that these women do have a claim against him for being fraudulently representing himself, if that is the case. Now, we have not heard his side of the story. Perhaps he is actually a porn recruiter, and perhaps these five or six women just didn't make the cut. Maybe there's a dozen out there that he actually did refer on and who now have, you know, jobs in the porn industry. I don't know. I kind of doubt it. But it's possible, you know. So, you know, if that were the case, if it were the case that he was actually referring them to porn producers and creators, then what would anyone have to complain about?
Indeed. These girls, right, just that, hey, I went to this guy. I thought he was telling me all the right things and I was going to be good. And then I ended up not getting any offers. So, great. I mean, it'd be ridiculous. If you go to apply for a job and you don't get the job, you don't walk out of the job saying this guy wronged me some way. You just say, well, I didn't get the job. I wasn't good enough or whatever. They hired somebody else. You don't have some sort of a claim against that person. Just because sex is involved in a porn application process doesn't mean that you were raped because you were rejected. Your application was rejected. You voluntarily went along with the whole application process for this porn process, and like you said, for all we know, he actually is a porn recruiter. We didn't get an interview from his side of the story. I highly doubt it, but we don't know. But even so, it's worse. He's guilty of fraud, which is bad enough, but he's not a rapist.
And the fraud would certainly, you know, people can choose to disassociate with him as they wish. I would fully support that. You know, if this were a friend of mine who was posing as a recruiter and not actually doing the recruiting in order to just sleep with, you know, young women, I would probably look down upon them and not want to hang out with them. But I don't think that it's a matter for law enforcement necessarily. And you know, if he were actually a recruiter and these women just didn't get picked up by a agency or whatever, then, you know, then he's absolutely not in the wrong. You know, if he was actually doing this not in a fraudulent way, I'd fully support it. I'd be like, hey, that's cool, man. You're providing a service of value. You know, you're doing what you're saying you're going to do. You're probably making a profit. You know, no problem. You know, I may not want to hang out with you because now I've got a couple of kids and I'm married, and that wouldn't look so good for me. But there's no fraud, no issue. You follow me?
Right. And like, it seems like he's already done the hard part. It seems like he's already asked them a bunch of questions. He has taken pictures of them. He's had sex with them. He could easily just refer what he has to an actual porn producer. And I'm sure there are many number of porn producers who would be like, hey, look at all these girls that have come in that are interested in being in business. let's evaluate them, or let's take a look at them.
Right, and that makes all of this go away. If he had simply done that, if he'd taken it one step further, it's a non-issue.
Yeah, and he's already got it. He's got all the information collated. He's got it all collected. All he has to do is make a phone call or send an email.
like you're saying, he's done all the hard work. He's at the last, the last dash. Just put it over the hump, and you're good. Yeah. So, if anything, the guy's an idiot, to say the least.
He is leaving a lot of money on the table. He could sell those applications to a porn producer, or get paid, a finder's fee, or whatever the appropriate amount is for his service. He's a recruiter. Recruiters make money. Why just stop? I don't get it.
Yeah, he would have been far better off actually being a recruiter, having the sex with the women, referring them on, making some money, and, rinse, repeat.
Yeah, it's a win for everybody. If he just follows through, he makes money, which he wasn't doing otherwise. It's probably just costing him more money. He gets everybody happy, and then he gets to keep doing what he's doing, and then he doesn't face the social media backlash.
Yeah.
So,
now, go ahead.
I got nothing. What are you going
to
say?
Well, I just wanted to throw out, a possible theory on why he was doing this, and that would be, and this is going to be non-PC, folks, so I'm going to just trigger warn you the shit out of you right now, but I would imagine that this guy, and I've seen some pictures of him, not the best-looking guy, not the worst-looking guy, but an average-looking guy. And on any given, night, he probably has an opportunity to meet women, sure, but maybe, oh, man, this is going to sound so bad, but maybe, they're similar to him, moderately attractive, if he is, I don't know. This is awkward, man. But let's just say
plow through, do it.
So we'll just assign values to these, subjective values, and we'll call them sixes and sevens, okay? Just for the sake of argument. So on any given night, he can get a six or a seven, on average, and maybe on a good night get an eight, and on some nights he doesn't want to talk about later, a four or a five. Well, what if he had this, brilliant opportunity? If he actually was a recruiter, this would be awesome for him. And that would be go out and only contact 9s and 10s on Facebook and do a numbers game. And the handful percentage that respond and the handful percentage of those that actually go through with it, and as long as you're doing it legitimately, no fraud, then all of a sudden you've changed your situation from the, 6s and 7s to 9s and 10s. Your thoughts?
I didn't think that sounded bad. That sounded like a good strategy for upping his game. And it makes sense to me. People like to romanticize sex and the dating process because they like to think that it's all about love and finding a lifelong companionship. And for many people, that is. But for many people, it isn't. And there's stuff out there for all tastes. And if people are just looking to hook up or whatever, and this guy's found a way to up his game and, date more attractive women, more power to him. The only thing I have a problem with is the fraud. So you eliminate that out of your game and you come at him a straight shooter, just do what you say you're going to do. I got no problem with it. More power to you, buddy.
Yeah. Yeah. And to your point earlier about, everyone likely has committed some lie or level of fraud when meeting people. And think about the times that men and women are out at bars and they're telling each other that, oh yeah, I'm a race car driver. Oh yeah, I'm a lawyer. I'm a rich playboy. Like you were saying, it's a similar thing, though. I think if he was not legitimately a recruiter, then he was pushing it a little bit further in his fraudulentness. But it's a similar thing, as you were saying.
Sure, there are. It's a judgment of degree. I mean, he's definitely has an entire semi, predatory nature of his strategy, whereas most dating is far more honest, although with some fraud. It's a judgment of degrees, right? Whereas his is almost entirely fraud-based. Others are just, minimally fraud-based. And people are looking for honesty. So people are rightfully offended when they encounter peer dishonesty and peer predatory aspects.
Now, I would bring up again that it is alleged. I mean, it is the tiniest of possibilities that he was legitimate and actually a porn recruiter.
Absolutely.
And if
absolutely. No
problem.
We did not hear from his side. He was not interviewed or he declined an interview or whatever. We didn't get to hear from his side. So absolutely, he gets the benefit of the doubt. But just be honest with it. Say what you're going to do. Say what you're going to, do what you're going to say. And I got no problem with it. I applaud his efforts. But if he's going to purely lie and create predatory situations, then yeah, I think he deserves whatever he gets as far as a public media backlash, the people that don't want to, you know, hang out with him and let other people know that he's not actually following through and he's a terrible porn recruiter.
Or not
one
at all.
The kind of services you're going to see. Or not one at all. Or one that you're going to go there and he's going to shove a bunch of drinks in your face and he's going to make you feel uncomfortable. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much alcohol comes into play with porn recruiting, but I do know that it is, you are responsible for what goes into your body. As long as someone's not forcing anything into your body, you are responsible for what's in your body. So you're an adult. You're a big girl. You can say no.
Yeah, and of course, we're not advocating, you know, slipping something into a drink, like, you know, full knowledge of what you're drinking.
Absolutely. No, if he's drugging them, that's horrific.
Yeah, we're not going coffee here.
No, that's absolutely assault.
Yeah.
That's aggression, and I'm totally against that.
Yeah. Now, one last aspect of the story I wanted to mention was that in the article, they mention that, that's too many mentions, but they say, or they write, that one of the girls felt icky afterwards and then slit her wrists that night, which is, of course, terrible. But they conflate it with this guy. But this was well before she would have been aware of other women and this story happening. And, you know, and so you can't really pin that on him. That's kind of on her.
I mean, sure, he's probably slimy or whatever, but that's her judgment. She should have said no and walked out as soon as she got a creepy vibe off the guy. If he went home later that night without any knowledge of whether or not he can actually fall through and did her porn auditions with other companies or whatever, then that is, yeah, you can't put that on him. That is something in her. I mean, I'm not going to psychologically profile her or evaluate her. What she's actually thinking or how positive her mental state is, but you can't put her problems on him.
Well said, sir. Is there anything else that you want to bring up, or should we put a cap on the amount of hate mail that we're going to get for this one and wrap this show up?
Yeah, just real quick. Muhammad Ali died, and he was he very publicly fought against the draft and the Vietnam War, and he will be missed. He was a good guy. He was an amazing athlete, and he stood up to the machine, and they stripped him of his title, and he couldn't fight for many years for it. And he said, I don't care. Or if he did care, you know, he would rather take what they're going to do to him than go kill other, you know, brown people or minorities or whatever, any other people that he didn't have a problem with. We could say a whole lot about that guy. He was impressive on many levels. Also for next episode, it might be really good to talk about what we were talking about earlier, the basic income, the universal basic income, or we could talk about who knows what else is going to happen in the news, some other huge thing. I don't know. What do you got, Dan?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I think that we could certainly talk about those things, though. Who knows what we'll end up talking about. It seems like no matter what we attempt to prepare, it always gets changed around throughout the week's events. So maybe some feedback from some folks would be nice. Last week we did play a clip from Murray and discuss that a little bit. So if you guys like that, you know, give us some feedback there. If you prefer our ramblings on just topics in the news, let us know that as well. We're here to please as much as we can. So I don't know. I appreciate you guys listening if you are, and we'll be back at it again soon. So thank you for your time. Robert, you want to sign us off?
Yeah, we've been the Reed Rothbard podcast. Check us out at ReedRothbard.com. Facebook.com/ReedRothbard, or no, is it, what is it, Daniel? The real Reed Rothbard?
Reed Rothbard Club.
Reed Rothbard Club. Facebook.com/ReedRothbardClub. I've been Robert Johnson, and my co-host, Daniel. And as always, it's been our pleasure. Thanks for listening.
All right, bye-bye.
Chipmunks. Chipmunk. We're the chipmunks. Guaranteed to brighten your day. Do, 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 do.